good morning. Welcome to another edition of Quest Community Vibrations, better known as Quest Youth Radio, which is the best youth radio. Today's broadcast starts with student host Walter Pierce as he does a presentation of Diamond featuring Frances Ellen Watkins Harper. Now, he will define the word preserve as a definition. Finally, he will also feature a curtain on Ella Fitzgerald, the groundbreaking songstress in jazz. Now, as we continue, I will feature an article on how to love someone with mental illness. Our show will end and conclude with Mr. Shelton Harris as he introduces to us today another groundbreaking musician, better known as Herbie Hancock. And of course, we will have our audience chime in and Miss Tanisha Gardner to let us know how we're doing and the progress of the program as we progress on forward. Thank you once again. Keep it locked. Don't go nowhere. This is 89.5 FM WSOU HD. Wake up. Poetry has a message, and history like a diamond shines clear to the truth. Words have meanings that we can comprehend like definitions. You see, news can show us a chain of events that we may not always understand. Now I'm asking you to pull back our musical curtain to see and hear the contributions of our diaspora, and you will find our Quest moment, where we attempt to make waves, indeed vibration. And so I thank you for joining us once again to hear a different perspective from our community. Without any further ado, I'd like to invite our student host. Take it away.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Quest Community Vibrations, live on 89.5 from the campus of Seton Hall in South Orange. Good morning. And to start off our show today, I want to start off with a diamond. And see, history is like a diamond. Each prism represents the work of a group of people at a particular period of time. Look into the diamond and see the reflections of your past self, the pain of your mother, the choice of your father, and the blood of your ancestors. look deeply and you are bound to find yourself. Now, for my diamond for today, it is on Frances Ellen Watkins Harper. And shout out to womenshistory.org for providing the article on her. Now see, Frances Ellen Watkins Harper was born on September 24, 1825 in Baltimore, Maryland. An only child, Harper was born to free African-American parents. Unfortunately, by the time she was 3 years old, both of her parents died and she became an orphan. Harper's uncle and aunt, Henrietta and William Watkins, raised her after her parents' death. Her uncle was an outspoken abolitionist, practiced self-taught medicine, organized a black literacy society, and established his own school in 1820 called the Watkins Academy for Negro Youth. Frances Harper learned from her uncle's activism, and she attended the Watkins Academy until she was 13 years old. At that age, children were typically expected to join the workforce. Harper took a job as a nursemaid and seamstress for a white family that owned a bookshop. Her love for books blossomed as she spent any free time she had in the shop. By age 21, Harper wrote her first small volume of poetry called Forest Leaves. When she was 26 years old, Harper left Maryland and became the first woman instructor at Union Seminary, a school for free African Americans in Wilberforce, Ohio. She taught domestic science for a year and then moved to a school in York, Pennsylvania. Shortly after she began working as a teacher, her home state of Maryland passed a law stating that free African Americans living in the North were no longer allowed to enter the state of Maryland. If found, they would be imprisoned or sold into slavery. Harper was now unable to return to her home, and she decided to devote all her efforts to the anti-slavery cause. Harper moved in with William and Lolita George Steele, who were abolitionists and friends of her uncle, William, who were friends of her uncle. William Steele became known as the father of the Underground Railroad while he was an office clerk and janitor in the office of the Pennsylvania Anti-Slavery Society. For the next 8 years, Harper traveled across the United States and Canada as a lecturer. After her first speech entitled The Elevation of Education of Our People, she was hired as a traveling lecturer for various organizations, including the Maine Anti-Slavery Society and the Pennsylvania Anti-Slavery Society. In addition to her anti-slavery lectures, Harper was committed to the struggle for women's rights and the temperance movement. She included her observations from her travels and her writings and began to publish novels, short stories, and poetry focused on issues of racism, feminism, and the classism. In 1959, Harper published a short story in the Anglo-African magazine called The Two Offers. This short story about women education became what was the first short story published by an African-American woman. On November 22, 1860, Frances married Fenton Harper, and the couple had a daughter named Mary. Unfortunately, Fenton Harper died 4 years later, and after her husband's death, Frances Harper began touring again and formed alliances with prominent women's rights activists. In 1866, Harper spoke at the National Women's Rights Convention in New York. Her famous speech entitled, "We Are All Bound Up Together," urged her fellow Americans African-American women to fight for suffrage. She emphasized that black women were facing the double burden of racism and sexism at the time. Therefore, the fight for women's suffrage must include suffrage for African-Americans. The next day, the convention held a meeting to organize the American Equal Rights Association to work for suffrage for both African-Americans and women. However, the organization soon split over the decision to support the 15th Amendment, granting African-American men the right to vote. Harper, along with Frederick Douglass and many others, supported the amendment and helped to form the American Woman Suffrage Association. Now, Harper would spend the rest of her career working for the pursuit of equal rights, job opportunities, and education for African-American women. She was a co-founder and vice president in the National Association of Colored Women Clubs and the director of the American Association of Colored Youth. She was the superintendent of the colored section of the Philadelphia and Pennsylvania Women's Christian Temperance Unions. Frances Ellen Watkins Harper died on February 22, 1911, in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And that concludes my segment on Frances Ellen Watkins Harper. And that was a lot, but it was a lot of important information that led up to her creating her women's suffrage group. And, you know, since we're in the month of March, talking about women's groups, women's suffrage groups are important to see how the progression of African-American women and women in general in this country have came, you know. They weren't given good enough rights. They weren't given equal rights to men. So it was important to have these groups to bring awareness to it. And, you know, I know a couple people, a part of her group that still is running today. And, you know, they talk about how great the group is and how women come together and connect to make a better change. So, again, I thank you for listening to my segment on Frances Ellen Watkins Harper, and you are tuned in to 89.5 WSOU.
Campus of Seton Hall in South Orange, we are Quest Community Vibration on 89.5 WSOU. And now, before we transition into our next segment, I just want to say a great job on the Diamond segment to talk about someone who was handed the gauntlet to continue to struggle and strive as an abolitionist and definitely spread the message of the African-American experience. It was great to hear your segment, Walter, on Ellen Watkins Harper. And so, if you please, continue.
Yes, and thank you for that. And to continue to my next segment of today, we're going to go into definitions. And see, this segment provides the listener with words and their meaning so that we can achieve together a common basis to say we care and we believe in ourselves. Remember, whosoever controls our definitions controls us. We must define existence and not have it defined for us. And as said earlier in the show, my definition for today is preserve. And preserve is a verb, and it means to maintain something in its original or existing state. Now, you're probably wondering why this definition is important. And the reason is because we need to be able to preserve our history so that the next generation could understand it. And what I mean by that, I mean really in our African-American communities. I have a statistic here from EJI.org, and it says that only 2% of the 95,000 entries on the National Register of Historical Places, only 2% are deemed worthy of preservation by the federal government. And what they're talking about is African experiences on the African Americans. That is not good because, you know, when you live through something and you want next generations to be able to experience it and get a visual view of how it was like, you would like to have that place there so that it could be used as something to be able to visit, to be able to learn from, because people usually tend to learn better by looking and actually experiencing things is the way more people actually know how to learn. And when you're able to get this experience of historical places, it could change the mindset of a person. And, you know, but one place really in particular in Washington, D.C., you know, the African-American Museum in D.C. has done a great job, an amazing job, and their best job of trying to preserve as much history of our African-American culture and, again, history. And, you know, when I went up there, it was just a lot of different things and a lot of different aspects of history I was able to experience and get to learn and understand. And it was just so many things and artifacts they had there, which if somebody will go there, they will come out there learning, actually learning something, because that's the important thing. You actually leave learning something. And, you know, if there were just more places like that, just historical places that has not been brought to the ground yet, you know, we should be able to keep it around so people could go there and visit and just learn from it and understand it like we do down in Washington, D.C. And, you know, that's really my take on the word and how it's prominent for me today. You know, I would like to also bring, you know, Mr. Bay in here as well. Mr. Bay, what do you believe? Do you believe that it is also important to preserve historical places so people could go out and visit and actually learn from it? What do you think?
Absolutely. Preserving information and artifacts are very important, and to keep them free from harm. In fact, I was having a discussion with a jazz performer and who was telling me as a result of this pandemic that we are in the midst of and experiencing, there's in fact a lot of clubs that are closing, and these particular clubs have artifacts, tapes of different musicians and acts, which have actually captured visually a lot of groups that we have not seen, groups and information. And so that tidbit of information and that percentage of it, you know, the African American experience to be preserved is vital and of great importance for our future and your future's future. But at this time, I want to continue the program because we have a lot on tap for today. We don't want the audience to go away. Keep it locked to 89.5. We're Quest Youth Radio. And now it's time for our segment of Chains of Events. It's an interpretation of news as it affects the minority community from the alloys of Newark. It's a report on events in politics, education, law, business, religion, and science. You see, Chains of Events reveals the interpretation of one event to another so that you, the Quest listenership, will know what's happening. Now, here's what's happening. Ladies and gentlemen, this information was provided to me by the National Alliance of Mental Illness. And this particular topic that I'm going to be covering today is kind of long, but I want you to hang in there with me because you know someone who does know or has someone in their family who suffers from the effect of mental illness. Now, while I have had information or dealt with information pertaining to mental slavery, which I'll pick up again next week, I want to bring to your attention on how to love someone with mental illness. You see, understanding how to provide support to someone who is suffering from mental illness can be very overwhelming and emotionally exhausting. And there are few good resources told from perspective of the mentally ill for the support of the family or the spouse. Now, here are a few quick insights from the National Alliance. A husband and a wife who navigated the rough waters together for several years. Embrace empathy and validation. You see, we live in a society where empathy is often doled out competitively, and we can feel bad for a person as long as their circumstances are worse. The worst thing that we've heard for today. For that particular day, we can appreciate a struggle as long as we didn't easily overcome something similar. In reality, empathy and validation weren't designed to work this way. Empathy sounds more like, I don't know how to help you, but I'm sorry you're hurting, and less like, I know you're having a hard time, but it could be worse. At least you have a roof over your head. No, no, no. We empathize with people in our lives without needing to hold their circumstances up against ours or anyone else's. We lessen the chance that our loved ones feel alone in their pain, and we strengthen the chance that they'll be vulnerable enough to reach out to us in times of need. Validation is simply the acknowledgement that a person has a feeling, even if we don't agree that it's an appropriate feeling to have or a response that would have in similar circumstances. Validation sounds like, I understand that you're angry right now, and that must be difficult. Allowing our loved ones to see that we acknowledge what they're feeling can give them freedom to accept that feeling and move on. Now, resist the urge to say, oh, you can try harder. Why? What we do and what we do when we see someone having an asthma attack, we act fast. We supply them with medication when needed, and we give them adequate time and treatment and the room to breathe. And we teach them the skills to properly take care of themselves and their affliction. Mental illness are scientific, psychological illness, and they need to be treated as such in order for wellness to be achieved. Now, learn from the symptoms and stop taking them personally. Each mental illness, like any illness, has its own specific set of symptoms and manifests in heightened seasons of struggle. And an important part of being supportive is understanding how the symptoms affect our loved ones. For instance, a person with any anxiety disorder may have difficulty concentrating or feel fatigued and restless. And those things may lead to irritability and aggravation, agitation. Someone with post-traumatic stress disorder may have a hard time staying in the present and have negative changes in their current belief system. And they may be uncontrollable, as like sweating and shaking during insulin shots and throwing up during the flu. But when we decide to view these things as choices and take offense that can lead to further feelings of isolation and shame for our loved ones who are likely feeling guilt, confusion, and embarrassment because of the side effects of their illness. So just as a roadmap doesn't indicate each tree along the way, neither can a diagnosis tell of every one person's individual nuances. But taking oneself out of the dark and eliminating the fear of the unknown is a better way to help someone on the journey forward. Now, research and treatment options. Once we face the reality that our loved one with, for example, major depression cannot get out of bed because of the symptom of her or his illness, and not because she doesn't love us anymore or because she isn't trying hard enough to find the joy in the small things that we go through besides and say, I'm so sorry to hear that you're having a hard day. I love you. And then we can further help her by sharing our thoughts and treatment because we've already established an atmosphere of healing and trust and empathy and acceptance. There are a myriad of treatment options for persons suffering from mental illness, medication, individual talk therapy, group therapy, and therapies designed to build or rebuild skills that, for whatever reason, have been lost and were never given the opportunity to develop, such emotions, regulations, and behavior intervention. Now, there can be tremendous success for people who find the right match and method of treatment, who are willing to do the work, but it takes support and it takes time. Let go of the timetable, ladies and gentlemen. There is no magic time frame for wholeness, and certain mental illness ebb and flow for many years. Believing that a loved one should be better in a few weeks or months can set everyone up for hardship, a trap. And everyone's journey is their own. Resolve to love and respect the person in your life through each part of the process. And when they move forward and when they regress, when they have victories, and when they stumble back into the old coping mechanisms, let go of idolized timetables and make one-time decisions that just as you would tell someone with cancer, that will remain by their side until they beat it. Encourage outside support and know that you are not alone. And you alone can't fix it. You see, seeing people we love in pain is hard, especially when we can't relate to their struggle. So fast forward, similarly, when a person you love is struggling with mental illness, you also need the support from your community. If the expectation of our loved ones is to reach out when they need help, we also need to be held to that standard. Now, remember, people with mental illness are suddenly different people because they're sick. And when they're struggling, they aren't monsters. When they get better, they're now new people. But our feelings and our situations can trick us into thinking so. Mental illness are illnesses, and sometimes they can change someone's circumstances, and they can even change their personalities from a time and change their interests, their spirit. Are the same person you have always loved, and they need to see that person in them, even when they can't see themselves clearly. Using person first language can help us from defining our loved ones by their struggles and can help us stay focused on hope. Now, that was a lot of information provided by the National Alliance of Mental Illness. And if you or a loved one needs help, you can call 1-800-950-NAMI. That's 1-800-950-NAMI. And if you would just like to talk or have someone on a helpline to chat, the number again, 1-800-950- NAMI. And that does it for me on this particular segment on mental illness and chain of events.
We shall overcome. Deep in my heart, I do believe we shall overcome. Though I join hands so often with students and others behind jail bars singing it, we shall overcome. Sometimes we've had tears in our eyes when we joined together to sing it, but we still decided to sing it. We shall overcome. No, before this victory is won, some will have to get thrown in jail some more, but we shall overcome. Don't worry about us. Before the victory is won, some of us will lose jobs, but we shall overcome. Before the victory is won, even some will have to face physical death. But if physical death is the price that some must pay to free their children from a permanent psychological death, then nothing shall be more redemptive. We shall overcome. Before the victory is won, some will be misunderstood and called bad names and dismissed as rabble-rousers and agitators. But we shall overcome. And I'll tell you why. We shall overcome because the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends toward justice. We shall overcome because Carlyle is right. No lie can live forever. We shall overcome because William Cullen Bryant is right. Truth crushed to earth will rise again. We shall overcome because James Russell Lowell is right. Truth forever on the scaffold, wrong forever on the throne. Yet that scaffold sways the future. Behind the dim unknown standeth God within the shadow, keeping watch above his own. We shall overcome because the Bible is right. You shall reap what you sow. We shall overcome. Deep in my heart, I do believe we shall overcome. And with this faith, we will go out and adjourn the councils of despair and bring new light into the dark chambers of pessimism. And we will be able to rise from the fatigue of despair to the buoyancy of hope. And this will be a great America. We will be the participants in making it so. And so as I leave you this evening, I say, walk together, children. Don't you get weary. There's a great camp meeting in the corner.
This is definitely one of my favorite cuts. When this single was released, I was a teenager. If you can believe I was ever a teenager, Walter. Well, anyway, it's time for our next segment, and I'm going to let Mr. Shelton Harris take it away.
Curtains is an exposure and analysis of artists and their work behind the curtain and stage. Many artists and companies have grown rich from the support of our community, but what benefits has the community gained from those artists? It is my extreme pleasure to pull the curtain off of an artist, and I mean that in the truest sense of the word, who has been a favorite of mine for as long as I can remember, Mr. Herbie Hancock. First, let me say, Herbie Hancock is a true icon of modern music, with a career spanning over 5 decades and 14 Grammy Awards, including an Album of the Year and an Oscar. He continues to amaze audiences around the world. Born in Chicago in 1940, Herbie Hancock was a child piano prodigy who performed the Mozart Piano Concerto with the Chicago Symphony Orchestra at age 11. He began playing jazz in high school, initially influenced by Oscar Peterson and Bill Evans. He also developed a passion for electronics and science and double majored in music and electronic engineering at Grinnell College. In 1960, he was discovered by trumpeter Donald Byrd. After 2 years of session work, he signed a Blue Note as a solo artist. In 1963, his debut album, Taking Off, was an immediate success, producing the hit Watermelon Man. 1963, Miles Davis invited Herbie to join the Miles Davis Quintet. During his 5 years with Davis, Herbie and his bandmates Wayne Shorter, Ron Carter, and Tony Williams recorded many classic albums, including ESP, Nefertiti, and Sorcerer. Later on, Herbie appeared on Davis's groundbreaking album In a Silent Way. Herbie's own solo career blossomed on Blue Note Records, with the classics albums including Maiden Voyage, Empyrean Isles, and Speak Like a Child. After leaving Miles Davis' band, Herbie put together a new band called the Headhunters, and in 1973 recorded their self-titled album with his crossover hit, as we just heard a little bit of, Chameleon. It became the first jazz album to go platinum. In total, Herbie Hancock had 11 albums on the top charts during the 70s. His 70s output inspired and provided samples for generations of hip-hop and dance music artists. In 1980, Herbie introduced trumpeter Wynton Marsalis to the world as a solo artist, producing his first album and touring with him as well. In 1983, a new pull to an alternative side led Herbie to a series of collaborations with Bill Laswell. Their first album, Future Shock, again struck platinum with the single Rocket, which rocked dance floors and R&B charts, winning a Grammy for the best R&B instrumental. Herbie and Bill Laswell continued to collaborate with some young and hip-hop artists and techno artists on the 2001 Future to Future. He also joined with Roy Hargrove and Michael Brecker in 2002 to record a live album, Directions in Music, live at Massey Hall, which was a tribute to John Coltrane and Miles Davis. Herbie Hancock also maintained a striving career outside the performing stage and recording studio. Recently named the Los Angeles Philharmonic as a creative chair for jazz, he currently also serves as the institute chair for the Herbie Hancock Institute of Jazz, the foremost international organization devoted to the development of jazz performance and education worldwide. He is also a founder of the International Committee for Artists and Peace. In July of 2011, he was designated a UNESCO Goodwill Ambassador. In December of 2013, he was the recipient of the prestigious Kennedy Center Honor. And in 2014, he was named the 2014 Norton Professor of Poetry at Harvard University after completing his lectures and series, The Ethics in Jazz, for a period of 6 weeks. His memoirs, The Herbie Hancock Possibilities, was published in 2014. And in February of 2016, he was awarded the Grammy Lifetime Achievement Award. A member of the American Academy of Arts and Sciences, Hancock is currently in the studio working on a new album. Now in his sixth decade of his professional life, Herbie Hancock remains where he has always been, in the forefront of world culture, technology, business, and music. No one can tell exactly where he's going to go next, but you can be sure that it's going to be something to admire. Let's go to another sample of Herbie's catalog. Maestro, if you please. We'll be right back.
Mr. Harris, I'm going to come back to you in just a minute, but we have definitely have run out of time. Let me get Walter, please promise to bring the soulful sounds, jazz, melodic sounds of Ella Fitzgerald. Please, could you do that segment for us next week? Can I get you to promise to do that?
Yes.
Thank you so much. I was kind of like looking forward to hearing the sounds of Ella Fitzgerald and hearing the stories that go with it. Mr. Harris, I want to come to you quickly. Tell us about the song that mega mix that we just heard. And then we're going to come to Tanisha so she can pretty much round us out and tell us how we did today. Mr. Harris,
talk to me. Yeah, well, that's exactly what it was. It was a mega mix of some of the hits that Herbie Hancock had in the 80s, mixed by Grandmaster DST. And it really just shows his versatility. If you've heard any of the Miles Davis cuts, any of his early cuts, this is a definite other side of the type of music that Herbie Hancock was into. And it's definitely worth listening to.
I heard techno. I heard jazz. I heard the jazz fusion. I heard hip hop. My goodness, what didn't that song have in it? And wait a minute.
That's the whole idea.
Yeah. And I was like rocking, and I was like, "Well, where are the b-boys and the break dancers?" Tanisha, talk to us, round us out, tell us how we did today.
the show was very impactful, definitely very powerful. It made me think about Claude Anderson, and also what Martin Luther King said to overcome. But Claude Anderson says to overwhelm. So from overcoming, we must overwhelm. By overwhelming means that we constantly stay on our grind and create that change that we need within our community.
Thank you for putting an exclamation point on our show. And without any further ado, we need to have our audience, Calvin, come in here. Tell us what you think about today's program.
Very filling today, guys. Good morning. Great show. I really enjoyed it. Love the segment on Herbie Hancock. He's actually one of my favorites. Keep up the good work, guys.
Okay. We got Val in here, and we got to squeeze her in before we go anyplace. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, and thank you for doing a presentation on Frances Ellen Watkins Harper. I'm a proud member of the Frances Ellen Watkins Collaborative Club, which is part of the National Association of Colored Women's Clubs. And thank you for that presentation.
Thank you for being here present with us for today's program. Walter, close us out.
I would like to thank everybody for tuning in to another edition of Quest Community Vibrations, live on 89.5 from the campus of Seton Hall in South Orange. And our motto is, Quest Youth Radio is the best,
youth radio. Yeah. All right. Thank you so much. We're going to leave you with the sound.
Ladies and gentlemen, as you know, we have something special down here at Birdland this evening, a recording for Blue Note Records.